You are live with Get Connected. It's me, Mike Agarbo. I'm joined today with my good friend Carmi Levy in studio. We've got a great program. We'll be talking with the CEO of Michelin. Yes, the Michelin Tire Guys. Actually was able to sit down with him and talk about some of the things that they're innovating when it comes to tires. Yes, I don't think you always think about innovation in tires, but as you can imagine, there's a lot going on, especially with EVs really growing in the marketplace. They have a lot of unique things that they need to run properly when it comes to tires. But we'll also be talking about some of the other innovations that they've got on the go as well. Plus, we'll be talking about TikTok. Yes, you might have heard it in the news. Looks like the U.S. is trying to ban it again. What does that mean? Can they really ban TikTok? And if they do, what happens? I mean, they've got, I think, a billion users, hundreds of millions of users in the U.S. We'll talk about the implications of that. Thanks for joining me, Carmi.
Nice to be with you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Let's get into some of the tech news right now. This was kind of an interesting one for me. Airbnb. I've stayed in many Airbnbs. They're banning all indoor security cameras. And I don't know how this is not banned to begin with. I started noticing a disturbing trend in the past couple of years. Cameras kind of on the outside of Airbnbs, you know, like doorbell cams and just security cams, I guess, to watch you come and go. But I guess this has been a problem, perhaps, you know, some of these Airbnb owners setting up indoor security cameras.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like any story, there are two sides to it. And for the longest time, many owners of properties have set up cameras to prevent vandalism, to kind of know what's going on while something is happening. There was that famous case of that house in Calgary that was trashed by Airbnb renters, and the house literally had to be rebuilt from scratch. But of course, you know, after that, after this sort of trend of Airbnb owners adding cameras inside the house, then of course we saw the inevitable round of headlines about people who felt they were being spied on, and in some cases actually were being spied on. And if you read deeply into Airbnb's terms of service, up until now, they were allowed indoors in common areas, but the hosts had to disclose them before they booked. They had to be visible, so you couldn't hide them behind a frame or something or a plant, and they weren't allowed in private areas like sleeping areas or bathrooms. So now they're updating that policy, and as of April 30th, no cameras at all inside the properties, even if they're visible. You're still allowed outside the property for security purposes, but again, those will have to be clearly visible and disclosed. So essentially what it does, it's trying to balance the rights and needs of both sides. You know, one side wants to protect its property, the other side wants to protect its privacy, just because people don't want to be spied on when they're staying in an Airbnb. And I think this goes a long way toward ensuring that kind of abuse, that godlike abuse from an Airbnb property owner doesn't happen anymore, because there have been some pretty scary instances of people who rented Airbnbs only to realize that there were cameras there.
But the owners are covered by insurance, aren't they, from Airbnb for that type of problem?
They are. Yeah, they are. There's a liability clause that Airbnb's insurance will cover any damages incurred in the process. But, you know, it's always the edge cases that get the headlines, the ones where, you know, the major parties end up in a property that is so significantly damaged it pretty much has to be rebuilt. And so it's those cases that get everyone's attention. And yeah, they'll cover you. They'll get your house back to where it was. But we all know anyone who's ever lost a house to fire or, you know, any kind of major damage, flood, tornado, knows full well that the hassle that is. And so you'd rather prevent it from happening in the first place than have to be paid to rebuild it afterward.
Moving on to other tech stories here on Get Connected. This was a big crazy thing this week when I think Kate Middleton released a photo of her family with her children, and the major news wires or outlets basically took it off their systems, saying that it was doctored in a heavy fashion. They found a bunch of, photo errors showing that someone had gone in there and edited the photo. And this was kind of interesting because I got called by a number of news outlets myself to talk about this and how AI is, it's such a huge problem because of this. And I'm like, you know, if AI had done it, I don't think you would have noticed that there were any photo errors. It just seemed like a bad Photoshop job.
Yeah, exactly. And I say this as, you know, I'm a photographer in my spare time. So when I take photos off of my major camera, not just my smartphone, but, you know, my big camera, my Nikon, I'll run them through what I call workflows. So I'll process them in Photoshop or Lightroom. I'll correct for light levels. I'll punch them up a little bit. I'll make very slight tweaks just to make them look better. This is what photographers do. This has been going on since the beginning of time, and having that skill set, it's like knowing how to, you know, knowing your way around a darkroom. It's the modern day digital darkroom. This shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, and we're not trying to hide anything. This is just the deal with photography. There are two sides to it: when you take the picture, when you process it. The addition of AI means that it becomes even easier to make a photo look better, and that's great. The tools that I use, Lightroom, for example, has AI tools built right into it. If I don't want to make the changes myself, I can just click on AI update buttons all over the place in the interface and it'll do it for me. I don't have to have the skill. And so we know that the Princess of Wales is quite the shutterbug. She's taken a lot of pictures. We see pictures of her with carrying her camera, following her family. I think that's delightful. As it turns out, I'm guessing she's just not that great with Photoshop, because when you're not that effective with it, you do leave telltale signs that, you know, you tried to apply the Band-Aid tool to that piece of dirt that was on your kid's sleeve and it ended up smudging, or it ended up making it look really weird. If you tried to align two things, or you tried to put one where your kid was smiling, not where he was, you know, giving your other kid, you know, a noogie, then, you know, obviously you're going to leave those telltale artifacts behind, and it makes it obvious that the photo was edited. Was it doctored? Was it crafted from scratch? No, she was just probably trying to wrangle three kids and used editing tools probably badly to make a lousy photo a little bit better. The problem here is that it comes at a time when we are arguing globally about artificial intelligence in imagery, whether we can believe what we see and the need to label these things. So if there's any fault here, and I certainly don't want to assign fault to her, she's done something that most of us have done all the time, and no one thinks twice about it, is that the Kensington Palace should have done a better job including a label saying that this photo was created by the princess and there was some editing involved, light Photoshop. As long as we're transparent, and that applies to us as well as princesses, I think we're fine. I think the problem here is that a legitimately edited photo was, you know, sort of picked up by the world as a sign that the royals were trying to hide something, and no, they weren't. She was just trying to take a picture of her kids, and I've got three kids. I know what that's like.
Yeah, the biggest surprise to me was, you know, in that photo, how did she get them all to look at the camera at the same time and smile? Like, that was more of magic to me.
Yeah, and that's the thing is you know, with my kids, to this day, it's a problem. And so in many cases, like Samsung has a feature built into its latest smartphones that it'll take the best face of each person and it'll combine them. Now, of course, that's lovely for parents. That's an amazing tool. But is that really the photo? You sort of have to ask yourself, if AI has to create the photo, is that the case? And so I like having those tools at my disposal. But if I were going to be sharing that on my feed, I'd probably need to put a label on it saying, guess what? I use this tool, just so you know. If I can replace the sky. So if the sky isn't dramatic enough, I can put this lovely, you know, dramatic looking sky in. That's not the original photo. So now I'm not just punching up photo. I'm not just tweaking it a little bit to make it look a little bit better. I'm actually showing something that didn't occur. And that puts us into whole new territory. And I think if parents are going to use those technologies, and, you know, sunset photographers are going to use those technologies again, not that we shouldn't use them, but we should use them with transparency and visibility. That way everyone knows what they're getting. It's a lovely piece of art. It isn't really a photo in the definition that we've always thought it was a photo.
We've got a lot more to talk about on Get Connected today. We'll be talking about tire innovation with the folks over at Michelin and TikTok as well. The U.S. is trying to ban the app again. And I want to give a shout out to our contest. It's from the TELUS Friendly Future Foundation. We're giving away a Google Pixel phone. This is an amazing smartphone, amazing camera. Yes, with built-in AI features to take better photos. You'll also receive a $250 gift card to give to your favorite charity as well. You want more information? Go to www.getconnectedmedia.com. And if you hang out for the rest of the show at the end, I'm going to give you a secret word to get you extra entries into the contest. You're tuned in to Get Connected. Back after this. You are back with Get Connected. Mike Agarbo here. We're going to talk innovation and technology when it comes to things like tires. I've got a really fascinating guest with me. His name is Alexis Garçon. He is the CEO of Michelin Tires. And when you think tires, like, I don't think people always think innovation, but that's why I wanted to have you on the show today, because I've learned a lot about what you guys are doing in the tire arena when it comes to things like electric vehicle tires, but also sustainability. And then some of the other things that you're working on, like fuel cells and even wind power as well. So first of all, thanks for coming on the program.
No, thank you for having me. And let me correct, I'm CEO of Michelin North America.
One of the interesting things, we've talked about the EV technology, but sustainability is a big focus for you.
Yes, it is, because I think what you touch on different topics or innovation that we have been already commercializing. But if you look at the red thread across all of that, it's all about high-tech materials. And I think very few people know that you need 200 different materials to build a tire. So they all look black, round, but they are all very different. And that's why we are very, very choiceful in every material we use, because we have clearly set a vision that by 2030, we want to have 40% renewable or recycled materials in our tires. And the goal is to reach 100% by 2050. So by that, we just want to show our commitment that we want to provide the best tires for every kind of conditions, but at the same time, to make sure that we minimize the impact we might have on the environment. That's how we define the sustainable mobility that we want to promote in every business we touch. So could be tires, could be the maritime freight with the Wizamo example that we shared. So that's how a bit how our mindset is and our philosophy as a company.
So when it comes to, again, to the sustainability, can we get to a point where the tires are completely carbon neutral?
So that's the goal we set for 2050. And in fact, we have already demonstrated on the racetrack a tire made with 63% renewable and recycled materials. And you will have the opportunity to drive on the racetrack today on a tire that is made with 42%. So you know that already in 2024, we have achieved and exceeded the target we set for 2030. So yes, we are well on our way to be completely carbon neutral from that standpoint. But we are making huge progress also on the manufacturing side. So it's going to be a longer journey. But by 2050, we want to be carbon neutral as a company.
So I understand from a tire perspective, and I'm an EV driver myself, your line of tires coming out or going forward will be EV ready. What does that mean?
It means that, most people do not realize how critical it is to have the right tires. Because to make it very simple, the one biggest impact on the range of an EV is coming from the tires, because the tire has a friction with the road, and you need the greatest technology to be able to minimize that friction, because obviously you understand that the more friction you have, the more energy you need to move the car forward, which means less range for an EV. So we want to minimize that friction while maximizing all of our performances, starting with safety, because you don't want to lose control of your car, maximizing the wear so that your tires last longer. And that's why you need to get there high-tech materials, and this is where our expertise lies. And as a matter of fact, we have been increasing the wear of our tires by more than 20% in the last years. And while doing this, we have been increasing drastically the percentage of renewable and recycled materials in our tires. So that's how we combine performance and care for the environment, which we summarize through our all sustainable strategy when we say we care about developing our people, the profit, and the planet at the same time.
So when you say the tires are EV ready, obviously that means an electric vehicle can use them. Can a traditional gas-powered car use them as well?
Absolutely. And we say they are EV ready because we've been working on this friction. We call it the rolling resistance for now more than 3 decades. And on that time, the tires was optimized in rolling resistance to help the car to reduce that gas consumption. That's still the case today. Now, what has just changed that if you have an EV, it will extend the range of your car. And as a matter of fact, today, if you put a Michelin tire on an EV, you can increase the range of the car by up to 40 miles. And most people do not realize that actually the tire is the most critical feature to extend the range of your EV. So that's pretty amazing and exciting.
So that would actually save you money on charging.
That will, yep. And you have the best performance. You have a safe drive and the longest drive because, yes, the range of the car is extended. And also the tire wear is slower. We have the lowest tire abrasion of the market so that your tire is lasting longer than others. So that's the what we call the best performance we can provide.
Let's continue on the innovation side. What I found interesting, because you're Michelin, I just think tires. Maybe Michelin star restaurants as well, which is a whole other show. But you guys are into fuel cells, hydrogen fuel cells as well. That's something I didn't see, you know, Michelin doing.
Yes, that's part of the innovation mindset that we have as a company. But it all comes back to the high-tech materials I talked about. So when we have founded this joint venture in 2019, and we started with Faurecia, a parts manufacturer for cars, and last year, Stellantis joined this joint venture. So we envision it becoming one of the worldwide leader on fuel cell, hydrogen fuel cell, because the specific know-how we have is in the membrane that we have in those fuel cells that we use to combine the hydrogen with oxygen that will produce the electricity. And that's why you see the link between the high-tech materials that we need to build tires. But we believe that because of this know-how, we can bring those technologies to provide innovation to other markets, growing markets. And hydrogen is definitely a promising one that we started 20 years ago. So way before everybody was thinking about that, but we're already anticipating this movement in the market.
So going on the innovation route again, and maybe a little bit old school, you guys are also looking at developing wind sails for big tankers or freighters.
Yes, that's the other innovation that we've unveiled 2 years ago now. It's basically it's an inflatable and retractable wind sail, so you can go under the bridge if you need. That's very important, and that wind sail is made of high-tech materials, so that we can really help to decarbonize the maritime freight. And this innovation has received last year the most prestigious award, meaning the one coming from the Solar Impulse Foundation. So that was a huge recognition for the great work done by the team.
Any coincidence? It kind of looks like the Michelin Man. How it's kind of ribbed.
You could envision the Michelin Man instead of the sail. There are a lot of similarities. You're right. Yeah.
Okay. I have to ask a crazy question now because I didn't know the answer. But for the listeners, why is the Michelin Man white? Because it's a tire guy, but he's white.
It's back to the history of the Michelin Man. He was born this way by our founders, and we would just want to protect the legacy of our founders. But on that time, the rubber was white when we started in 1890. So that's where it comes from. The rubber was just white, so we just kept the original form because that's who Mr. Bib, as we call him, is today.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us on the program, and good luck with all these projects.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You are back with Get Connected. Mike Agarbo here with Carmi Levy. Don't forget to enter our contest, giving away a Google Pixel phone and a $250 prize that you can give to your favorite charity as well. This is courtesy of the TELUS Friendly Future Foundation. And hang out for one more segment. I'll give you a secret word to get you extra entries into the contest. It's time to TikTok, Carmi. TikTok, one of the, I guess...
It's
the,
always time to TikTok.
Totally. One of the more popular social media platforms in the world. It's a video app. You watch short videos. Highly, highly addictive. It's got this crazy algorithm that can really focus in and tune in on the type of content that you want. And it's spooky, spooky good. But the challenge is, especially for the Americans, is that it's Chinese. It's from a company called ByteDance, which has ties apparently to the Chinese government. And a bunch of U.S. politicians, including Mr. Biden himself, even Trump back in the day, he's kind of flip-flop on that. We'll get to that. They want to ban the app from the United States, essentially forcing it to be sold to more friendly hands. So we've gone on this merry-go-round before, Carmi. Trump tried to make it happen, but it didn't. No one bought it, and it just kept going. Like, why are we here again? Why didn't it get sold?
Well, Walmart and Oracle were actually at the front of the line in 2020 when then-President Trump was attempting to do pretty much the same thing that we're seeing now. And that was ultimately scuttled when the courts ruled against it. They shot it down. And, of course, then we know that time ran out on the Trump administration and, you know, the initiative died. And so here we are 4 years later, and if we have a sense of deja vu, there's a reason for it. And, of course, you know, what's changed now is the legislation has fewer gaps in it. It has more detail about what a sale would look like. They learned from that experience, and presumably they have enough ammunition to get it through the Senate, even though it's not going to be a cakewalk at this point. But what's interesting is that Donald Trump, who, as you said, was the original, sort of originator of this idea, has now come out against it. And the reason being, he said on record that he's worried that if you take TikTok away, that essentially it gives more power to Facebook. He's not a big fan of Mark Zuckerberg. This would sort of open up the market to them, and they would have even more market power. The reality is, it's always find the money. Mr. Trump, one of his major donors is a guy named Jeff Yass. He is a billionaire. He's also the largest U.S. investor in TikTok. And he has been warning, he supports a bunch of candidates, mostly Republicans, and he has told them if they back this bill, he'll cut off their funding. So we know there's a lot of political pressure. A lot of it is related to money. We know that there's a lot of concern about Chinese retaliation in the event of either a forced sale or a ban, that it could come back to bite American tech companies, that it could be the start of a digital trade war. So there's a lot of political facets to this, and all of them are ugly, especially anytime you deal with China. You know, America's probably largest global political near peer foe. The rhetoric is certainly ramping up, and unfortunately for TikTok, it finds itself at the center of this. All its 170 million American users want to do is video themselves dancing and then share it, or look at cute puppies for hours on end. They don't even realize in many cases what goes on when they install their app, where the data goes, and they probably owe it to themselves to do just that.
The whole Trump thing just baffles my mind, Carmi, because he's the one that instigated this back in his tenure. And now, because of whatever reasons, and you mentioned one potential one, that a major donor to him in the Republican Party is someone that has invested heavily in TikTok, suddenly he's got a different position. And here's a quote from him from CNBC last Monday. And this is what Trump says. "Frankly, there are a lot of people on TikTok that love it. There are a lot of young kids on TikTok who will go crazy without it. There are a lot of users, a lot of good, and there's a lot of bad with TikTok."
Word salad. Spoken like a guy who's probably never used the app directly, and maybe that's a good thing. Donald Trump, I'll remind our listeners, he was once a Democrat. This is a guy who will say anything in the moment if he believes it will bring advantage to himself. There's no principle there. It's not like he fundamentally believes one way or the other. He's just looking to advance his own aims. And at this point, he's trying to support his campaign. He wants to get back into the White House so he can continue his demagoguery. And this is the way that he sees it. And he sees that supporting this particular bill would be injurious to that, would stand in his way, would perhaps reduce the spigot of money that keeps this circus going. So it isn't based on any principle at all. The man has none. It's simply based on political survival. And I think we all need to sort of realize that, is that this entire debate over national security and data and where it's stored, it's only about one app. And if the U.S. were truly serious about protecting Americans from the interests of China using consumer apps to spy on them, they wouldn't be just targeting one app. They'd be targeting all of them. And so this is more election year politics than anything else. But at the end of the day, it isn't going to leave us safer for this. And if you want to use to share your apps, to share whatever you're doing, then you're going to keep doing it regardless. You don't care about the politics. And I think that's something that's sort of lost on the politicians.
It's interesting. Obviously, the Chinese government not happy about this. They've come out saying, I'm just going to boil it down here a bit, correct me if I'm wrong, Carmi, that this is not right, and they would block a sale of TikTok. Do you think they would actually do that? Like, I mean, this property could be worth hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah, they could. I think the last valuation of TikTok as a whole that was conducted last year it's valued about $220 billion. And I would estimate that's even larger now, given how quickly it's growing. If you are going to carve parts of it off, so it wouldn't be selling the entire part of TikTok, it would be the American component, almost like a U.S. subsidiary. You would have to negotiate with the owners, and the owners are in sort of, you know, in alignment with the Chinese government. They've signed agreements with the Chinese government. They're Chinese-owned companies. You have to play by their rules. And Chinese government, ever since last year, has been saying they would be opposed to such a move. They're calling this bill bandit logic. They're not very happy. And so I don't really understand how the American interests in this expect to be able to negotiate with the Chinese when the Chinese have essentially said, it's not happening. That's not how we do business. So this isn't just a traditional business transaction, certainly not one that can be done within the 6-month window that this bill proposes. So logistically, I just don't see it happening. And I think it's almost like the government sort of wants, in the U.S., wants to force ByteDance to either, you know, sell or you know, face a ban. In other words, they almost expect that there to be a ban by default, because there's no way they're going to sell within 6 months. There's no way they're going to agree to how to wall off the data, you know, how to carve off the U.S. part of TikTok from the global part of TikTok and ensure that the data doesn't flow to China. Mergers and acquisitions are difficult enough when they happen in the same country. When you start going, you know, reaching into China, it's a whole other level, and we've never done this before. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see, like, this would cause a major meltdown, obviously, with a lot of kids, but also in the advertising world as well. TikTok has become one of the juggernauts out there. There would be a lot of fallout from that. What I find interesting as well, a lot of critics are saying that the Chinese government is kind of hypocritical on their stance on this, when many American social media outlets cannot operate in China under the Chinese rules. You know, that would be Google, you know, and with YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook and Instagram. So, you know, if you're in China, the firewall there will not let you access them. And they're not available there because they don't want to play by, you know, the censorship rules, essentially. I'm kind of, again, boiling it down. So it's kind of interesting that China's fighting hard here, yet the American social media outlets can't really operate over there.
And that's, you know, that's the asymmetric challenge we face when we are a democracy and China is not. And it's almost like trying to tell China, well, you know, because you follow communism, you know, it puts you at an unfair advantage. They're not going to have that conversation. They're communists. That's the way they operate. So it's been like that forever. And if the American companies decided that they wanted to play by China's rules, they would be able to do business there. But of course, that would significantly compromise their entire business model. So that's not happening. So it's not so much a ban as is the Chinese terms for doing business there are so onerous that it just doesn't make sense for American companies to go in there. So they don't. In much the same way that, you know, after Russia went into Ukraine, a lot of the conditions that allowed North American companies like McDonald's, for example, to do business there were no longer in place once the sanctions were in place and once Russia sort of started reverting or sliding back to what it was like during the Soviet Union days. And so, you know, it no longer makes sense for American companies to be there. And so, yeah, it is rich for China to be claiming that, but them's just the rules. That's just the way they want their playground to run, and we don't have a whole lot of choice there. And by imposing our rules on them, we're essentially allowing them or forcing them to do the same thing, not just within their own borders, but beyond.
Well, we'll have to see what happens this year when it comes to TikTok. Will it really be banned, or is there just too much money on the table? I think something will happen, obviously, and probably a U.S. company or investor will take over the U.S. operations in some form or fashion. When we come back from the break, I'm going to give you the secret word and some news on where Get Connected, this program, is going in the future. You're listening to Get Connected here on the Chorus Radio Network. Back after this. You are back with Get Connected. It's Mike Agarbo here in studio. I've got my good friend Carmi Levy with me today. And we are doing a contest. We are giving away a Google Pixel phone and $250 to your favorite charity. This charity. This is courtesy of Telus's Friendly Future Foundation. They are doing great work with students and communities, giving back to Canadians. If you want more information on the contest, www.getconnectedmedia.com. And like I was saying, there is a secret word this week. You're going to have to hang on just a little bit longer. And near the end of the program here, I'll tell you what that is, and you can get some extra entries into the contest. So some major news, Carmi, and I shared a little bit with you. It looks like Get Connected is going off the air for a while on Corus, the radio network. So this is the last show in its time slot here on CKNW and all the other stations across Canada. It's been a long ride, Carmi. I mean, over 20 years for me here.
Wow. Which is, I mean, you know, I've got to salute you, because in this day and age, knowing the media landscape as it is, that is an incredible ride. And I think it's testament to what you've put out, what you bring to the show every week. It's the kind of technology insight that has always driven me in my career. It's one of the reasons why I love being part of the show. And whenever you ask if I can join, I of course say yes, because it, your vision is very similar to mine. Is technology needs good insight, and there's so much demand for it. Everyone looks for it. My inbox is filled with questions from friends and strangers alike on how to make sense of our increasingly tech-driven world. And this is what Get Connected has always delivered, the answers that we need so that we can navigate this tech planet a lot better than we would otherwise be able to do. And you've done it better than anyone else. And that's why it's been around for as long as it has. And that's why that demand is where it is, because you answer questions that people have and they weren't able to answer them anywhere else.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I don't even know the exact amount of time I've been on the air with, you know, I know it's over 20 years, could be as much as 25. I started back in the 90s. You remember my previous partner, David Chalk. I was working with him at his computer store, Doppler Computers, back in the mid 90s, and we were always trying to find, you know, innovative ways to get the word out about technology and the computer store. And one of those, I said, you know, Dave, you know, because he was a good speaker, you know, public speaker, I'm like, we should get a radio show for you. And he's like, no one will put me on radio. Anyway, we contacted, I think, CKW at the time, and after a little bit of back and forth, somehow we got him on air. You know, he'd never done radio shows or anything before, but, you know, it was called Chalk Talk back then. And, you know, I was the co-host. And God, had I done any radio? No. Like, just, you know, you just kind of make it up as you...
Everyone's got to start somewhere. Yeah, exactly.
And you just make it up as you go along. And he did that for a number of years. And eventually, back then, you know, we didn't have the luxury of being able to record these things at home. You know, you had to go down to the studio. And it had to be, for the most part, live. So, you know, we were working 5 days a week, you know, Monday to Friday. And then we'd have to then drive down to CKNW on the Saturday to do the show. So, you know, it was a lot. And, you know, I lived out in White Rock. You know, he was out in Mount Lehman, you know, kind of Langley, Abbotsford, right? So that was kind of quite a big trek, you know, for him at the time. And so, you know, he kind of, you know, graciously handed over the reins to me, and I was able to take over the program and just kind of run with it for all of these years. But, you know, there's been a lot of change. You know, I didn't come from a radio background. I didn't come from an audio kind of engineering background as well. So I had to learn all these things on the go. And I remember, yeah, it used to be live. We used to take a lot of callers. You know, it was a call-in show as well. And, you know, that was challenging, right? Because people would just phone in with just the craziest tech questions. And, you know, typically the reason they're phoning you is because they just can't find the answer anywhere, even if they've Googled it, right? And so it's not it's not like, you know, I'm the Messiah and can, you know, figure it out. But, you know, I think
that's where they got their answers back then. And and you never knew what was going to happen when someone picked up the phone. And that was the remarkable thing about radio then. is that it was so unpredictable, and that you were able to provide those answers. I got my start calling in call-in shows and trying to get answers as well, and that's sort of what drew me to technology. And it always amazed me the skill that they brought, that they always seemed to know if they didn't have the answer, they could still point me in the right direction. And that's the, you know, that's kind of the value that you would have brought, and that's why people called, because they couldn't get the answer anywhere else. And I think that sort of culture, that vibe is as necessary today and as true today as it was then. Obviously, the technologies are different. It's easier, you know, it's a different production process. We have better tools. But that connection to humans, there are folks out there who need help and aren't getting it anywhere else. And you're the only one who can provide it. And to me, that is a very powerful place to be and a very powerful statement about what you bring to the table.
Yeah, it's funny. And, you know, along the way, you know, I learned that, hey, I could pre-tape the shows. Which, and so then it was kind of, yeah, I was worried about the interactivity I was having with the audience, you know, oh, and I thought that's, and I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I loved interacting with the audience with the calls and questions. But I was so worried when I started pre-taping, you know, the radio show that, you know, my listenership would go down. It went up, Carmi. I don't know why, but it, you know, the ratings went up for it. So that was interesting. And to pre-tape it, I still had to come down to the radio station, but, you know, I could do that during the week and pre-tape it. But it became a godsend when I figured out how I could do this at home. You know, the technology had advanced enough and I, you know, learned how to use the tools. And yeah, it was an interesting journey along the way. So I learned a lot about radio and journalism and, you know, audio in general. And I met a lot of super fascinating people along the way as well. So it's been a good ride, and it's still going to be a ride. I'm going to continue to do the program as a podcast for now. We are looking at other potential radio opportunities at the moment. But if you want to continue tuning in with me and Carmi here, I'm going to drag you along for the ride as well.
Dragged, my friend.
Yeah, you can go to our website. You know, we do have the podcast information up there. Again, the website is getconnectedmedia.com. getconnectedmedia.com. You know, subscribe to the podcast. It's also available on all the popular podcasting platforms like Apple and Spotify and Google. And please, it would be great if I could continue having the listeners as part of this this family. And, you know, we're going to do some exciting things, might even do some daily podcasting as well. Because, you know, Carmi, I know you don't have enough to do during a daily basis. But yeah, we'll be releasing a new program, a new podcast every week going forward, starting next week. So I'll still be around, and it's just a different journey now. You know, technology has changed dramatically. Obviously, podcasts are a very popular way to get audio information as well. So, you know, again, www.getconnectedmedia.com. We've got information about the podcast there, or you can subscribe to it from your favorite podcasting places. Again, Apple, Spotify, Google, there's many out there. One more shout out to the contest. And, you know, I've had a lot of support from the industry along the way. TELUS has been a great supporter, and they have given out a great prize this past month. It's a Google Pixel phone and $250 to your favorite charity. And it's part of the TELUS Friendly Future Foundation. And you want to go there, you can enter the contest. And I've been teasing the secret word for the entire program. It's students, because it's all about TELUS giving back to not only Canadians, but, you know, education and the students out there that need a little helping hand to get where they want to go. And again, www.getconnectedmedia.com. And so I guess this is my last minute here, Carmi. I just I need to thank all the folks that have helped along the way. David Chalk, obviously, for graciously handing over the show, and some of the co-hosts along the way. You know, Andy Barrar, you know, John Beeler. I know I'm forgetting a bunch because my old brain can't go back that far, I imagine. And Carmi, you've been a great supporter along the way. So thank you, Carmi. And I want to thank all the listeners. And again, go to the website, getconnectedmedia.com, and subscribe to the podcast. I want to continue having this journey with you. This is Mike and Carmi logging off. We'll see you again in the podcast world.